everyone, and welcome to New Books in French Studies. I'm your host, Roxane Panchassi. My guest today is Catherine Yakovon, the author of Benjamin, Barthes, and the Singularity of Photography. And the book was published by Continuum in 2012 and has recently come out in a new paperback edition with Bloomsbury. Catherine is also the editor of a special issue of Nottingham French Studies on photography in contemporary French and Francophone cultures that came out in the summer of 2014. So I'm hoping we'll get a chance to talk about both of these publications during our conversation. Hi there, Catherine.
Hi, Roxane.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, thank you for your invitation.
I wonder if you could get us started by telling our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what got you interested in French studies.
Yes, sure. I am currently assistant professor in French studies at the University of Nottingham in the UK. And my interest in French studies really goes back to my childhood, I suppose. I learned French at a very early age and spent a lot of time in France and holidays, etc. And I suppose this just got me interested in everything French, the language, the culture. And so I started when it came to university already at high school. I started sort of, you know, focusing on French, and at university then sort of started reading more seriously about French culture, French theory, and French history.
So what brought you to the subject of photography in particular?
In addition to studying French, I also studied art history. And within art history, I focused on photography. And I suppose it was a kind of mutual attraction between the two authors, the two thinkers I chose to work on, Benjamin and Barthes, who are known as, you know, the most, two of the most often referenced authors in the history and theory of photography. So it was a combination of this and also this background in art history and photography that kind of made it seem very natural for me to look at these two thinkers in relation to photography and sort of visual culture more generally.
Mm-hmm. And you do, you know, the book is focused on these two towering 20th century thinkers, Benjamin and Barthes, as you say. You look at some of their classic writings on photography and you situate each of them in relationship to the historical context in which they were thinking about photography and making connections between their ideas. I wonder if you could give us some very brief biographical and intellectual information about each of these two authors before we get into the arguments you're making in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Walter Benjamin was born in Berlin at the end of the 19th century. He was born into a, you know, fairly wealthy, fairly well-off Jewish family. He had a rather difficult sort of intellectual training, or rather it was very difficult for him to gain entry as an ordinary professor in the German academic system at the time, which was in part due, obviously, to the historical moment, but also due to his particular kind of work, a work that was very much sort of at the between disciplines, or in certain cases also sort of not very sort of not really conforming to the current or dominant trends. Mm-hmm. And then obviously also because of the historical circumstances, the rise of Nazism in Germany, Benjamin was forced into exile, and he left Germany at the beginning of the 1930s, in 1933, to take permanent residence up in Paris, which is really where he spent the rest of his life, until 1940, when again he was forced with the Nazi troops moving in, closing the, in on Paris. He was forced to move to the south of France and then planned to flee, where there were sort of several plans. His friends Adorno and Horkheimer, who had already moved by then to New York, where they continued their work in the context of, you know, what is known as the Frankfurt School, they tried to get him a visa to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Benjamin had, when he left France, I think he had a visa to get from Spain to or to get out of Spain, but he didn't have a visa to get out of France. And so it was in a very small border town, Portbou, in Spain that he committed suicide in 1914.
You know, we were talking about this before the interview, Katrine, this idea that, you know, I know that Benjamin, of course, wasn't a French person, but, you know, and we're doing this interview in the context of a French studies podcast. But as you say, you know, he spent so much important time in France. And also, I mean, I think of some Benjamin as someone who is so engaged with French culture that, you know, as a French studies person, does it seem comfortable to be working on, you know, someone who's both inside and outside of France? Is that, does that pose particular challenges or?
Yes, sure. Well, Benjamin, I think I mentioned to you, when you read Benjamin in German, you realize how much he has actually written in French, which sometimes can get lost in translation when this is not made explicit. In fact, some of Benjamin's most well-known essays, for example, the essay on the reproducibility of the artwork, was in fact first published in French and not in German. Mm-hmm. And his sort of magnum opus, which remained unfinished, the Arcades project, was of course also, well, he worked on this between, or he started working on this in 27, when he first went to France, to Paris for a longer period of time, really until the end of his life. And there again, his sources are French, and the book, in fact, in German, half of it is in French, because Benjamin never translated the kind of, you know, quotations and the fragments that he collected into German. He left everything in French. But beyond this kind of linguistic reason, Benjamin is a thinker who was very, very much influenced by the French tradition. You know, in terms of sort of literary traditions, for example, he was very much influenced by Baudelaire's ideas about modernity. He actually translated the first three volumes of Proust's À la recherche du temps perdu. So he was, his whole thinking is really steeped in French tradition and culture. And there is, of course, a dialogue, perhaps more, between the kind of German tradition he comes, or this German background where he comes from, and the French tradition in which he sort of moves around. But I think this is it's rather an interesting aspect rather than something that gets in the way of, you know, French studies as a kind of per se. Yeah.
And what about Barthes then? Can you give us a little background information on Barthes to situate us?
Barthes was born in 1915 in the southwest of France, and spent most of his life in Paris. He also, not unlike Benjamin, had a rather difficult sort of university academic career. Because of illness, he was unable to sit for the entry exams to the École Normale Supérieure, and from then on, he really had a sort of very difficult career. However, Barthes eventually was elected to the chair of semiology at the very prestigious Collège de France, and so ended his career really sort of at the, you know, at the sort of absolute top of French academia. But again, like Benjamin, and this is also what made it so interesting for me to juxtapose these two very different thinkers, also coming from very different traditions, these similarities and the difficulties they had in their careers, in a way, I think also influenced their writing, or vice versa. I'm not quite sure which way. But their writing, so Barthes' writing, is also characterized by a sort of typical sort of between disciplines. There is now, he is not just a literary critic or a philosopher, or, you know, he is, like Benjamin, between disciplines, writing essay-like, you know, little essay-like books, or smaller texts in reviews, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So I think there's also a similarity, despite all the differences, you know, the linguistic differences, the traditions they come from, the different times in which they worked. Bacht died in 1980 as the result or the consequences of a car accident he had in Paris. Mm-hmm. So despite all these differences, there are on this, you know, already on this kind of very, well, on a, you know, sort of a superficial disciplinary level, if you like, you know, quite a lot of similarities between them.
Katrine, in the beginning of the book, you explored the question of influence in all of these different sorts of ways. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that. You know, to what extent would you say that Bacht on photography or in terms of his broader thought and work was influenced by Benjamin?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is a question that I was very surprised when I started working on these two authors, you know, and the scholarship on Benjamin and Bacht, you know, could fill entire libraries. So they are not authors, you know, sort of under-researched authors by any means.
Sure.
However, what I did find surprising is that hardly anyone even mentioned the question of influence, let alone sort of, you know, dug a little bit further, looked a little bit more in detail what the possible influences could have been. Mm-hmm. And I felt that embarking on this comparative project between the two, that I just couldn't get around the question without, in turn, sort of seeing influence as this, you know, monolithic, one-directional concept. I always thought of influence paradoxically going both ways. If we look back at it and look at this comparison, Bacht's work also influences Benjamin's. It's a slightly paradoxical idea, but mm-hmm. I always believed that, you know, there is a sort of dialogue. And so this question of influence for me, as I say, was a kind of natural starting point. And I was very surprised and very happy to find some very interesting details in relation to this question. And this is in particular in the context of photography, which has a lot to do with photographic images, which again, the actual images these two thinkers talk about is something that hasn't been talked about a lot, or at least I felt not in enough detail. And so when I started looking a little bit closer at the images they use, and also just very practically at the bibliography of Bacht's La Chambre Claire, Camera Lucida, although I have to refer to the French title here because the bibliography is simply omitted in the English translation. Huh. But by looking at the French bibliography, Bacht made reference to a special number of the Nouvel Observateur, which is a weekly magazine. And in the 1970s, Robert Delpire, who is a very important person in the French and especially Parisian photography scene, put together a couple of special numbers. And in these special numbers, they were really very beautifully produced with, you know, extremely high quality reproductions, something that, you know, is impossible to find nowadays. And in one of these special numbers, and exactly the number that Bacht refers to, there was a translation of Benjamin's most important text on photography, The Little History of Photography. And the images which illustrated Benjamin's essay in translation are some of the images, the same images that Bacht reuses in his own writing. So for me, there was a clear sign that Bacht, well, it is, you know, very likely that he would have read Benjamin's text in translation. And in fact, we know from an interview that he gave a couple of years later that he indeed knew this article or this essay by Benjamin. But for me, this opened up the kind of interesting question of why, and this is, you know, the perennial question, why did Bach not quote Benjamin? Why does he not refer to Benjamin like he does refer to other texts in La Chambre Claire in particular? For Bach's standard, his book on photography is really quite well referenced. And so rather than going sort of into too much detail into this question that I think ultimately we can't answer, what I found very interesting is that there is this citation almost. It's almost like an image citation, a visual citation by using the same photographs that illustrated Benjamin's text in the French translation, in the Nouvel Observateur, that he used these same images in his own book. So I found it quite an interesting starting point to explore these visual connections also between the two thinkers.
So we've covered the two thinkers, I mean, not in their entirety, we'll talk about them more, but in the title, Benjamin Bach, and you've given us some information, some sort of background about both of these thinkers. So I want to take on the second part of the title now and ask you about the singularity of photography and what that notion means to you and how it's working for you throughout the book.
Yes. Well, singularity, to talk about the singularity of photography may seem quite paradoxical at first sight because, well, photography is first and foremost associated with reproducibility, mm-hmm. not least thanks to Benjamin's own writings.
Right.
However, for me, singularity was sort of the main concept or the main point of comparison, or it became rather the main point of comparison between these two authors. And I think the first thing I would say about the singularity of photography in Benjamin's and Bach's works is that it really, I try to sort of I didn't have this idea of singularity and try to find it in their works. It was really something that came out of my engagement with these two authors. And singularity is not something that is related to the material image, the photographic image in its uniqueness. This is obviously a very sort of very complicated concept as well, again, in photography, where the uniqueness of the image, where one may wonder what this could be. Is it the negative? Is it the first print? Is it the vintage print? Is it, you know, could it be later prints? So the whole question of uniqueness, again, is sort of very, it's very tricky with photography. So this is then not what singularity is about.
Mm-hmm.
Singularity is, although it may be related to certain aspects of the medium specificity of photography, it is in fact a rather relational concept. It is an event-like concept. It's something that happens rather than, you know, a kind of ontological or, well, rather than a kind of feature of an image. It's something that happens and something that happens between three elements: the photograph itself, the referent in the photograph, i.e. the sitter, the depicted, the represented person, and the particular viewer. So singularity in this sense is a kind of, you know, three-dimensional or three-part relation that happens between the photo, the viewer, and the person photographed.
Right. And I'm going to want to come back to this question of, you know, portraiture and the emphasis on portraiture. But before we get to that, let's just talk a little bit about the role that the work on photography plays in Benjamin's larger body of work. So what's the status of photography in Benjamin's work? And, you know, to do the kind of flip of that, what would you say are his sort of major, I mean, in broad strokes, contributions to the world of the theory and history of photography?
Well, Benjamin wrote, he didn't write an awful lot on photography in terms of quantity. However, I think what he wrote is of such high quality, or has so much, there is so much that can be said about it, is that, you know, even though there are only really, well, two major texts, there is the Little History of Photography, which was a text that he wrote in 1931, a very important moment in Weimar Germany in the context of sort of, you know, recent developments, technological developments, but also wider wider developments in society. And he wrote this text. So he wrote this text in the context of Weimar Germany in 1931 as a review essay. So it was in fact not even conceived in the first place as a kind of theoretical piece of writing, but rather a response to a couple of recent publications on photography, on 19th century photography. So in the 1930s, this was the moment when the first richly illustrated books appeared in Weimar Germany that actually looked back at the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And so Benjamin's this first text from 1931 is very much focused on 19th century photography. The second text that, so the second of the two most important texts on photography that Benjamin wrote is the artwork essay. And there, photography, the status of photography is slightly different, because photography is seen more as a tool for reproduction and the reproduction of art first and foremost. Mm. So the question is not so much even on photography as, you know, the medium as such and what the medium of photography or photographic images are about, but rather what photography does to painting and art. There are a couple of sort of smaller texts and passages in the Arcades Project where Benjamin also talks about photography. And this gives a kind of indication that photography in Benjamin's work is part of this whole idea of developing a kind of archaeology or ur-history of modernity, going back to the 19th century. And Paris for him was the kind of, you know, quintessential city where modernity started. Sort of going back to the 19th century in order to understand modernity and the process that, you know, Benjamin saw himself still as, you know, as being a part of.
Mm-hmm. You explore so many interesting ideas, Katrine, in Benjamin's thoughts and work on photography. And one of these, I mean, I know we can't talk about all of them, in, you know, because of time constraints, but one of the ones that you talk about that seems to play a particularly important role in your book is this idea of aura, especially in portraiture. And I wonder if you could say something more about what aura means in Benjamin's work, what this emphasis on portraiture and especially the status of family photographs is in Benjamin's work.
Yes, well, aura is, you know, one of the sort of most most recognizable terms, I think, in Benjamin's media theory, if we can call it that. Aura is usually thought of as being related to the artwork essay, and hence photography is usually seen, according to the artwork essay, as taking away the aura of the artwork. However, what is interesting, if we look at his earlier writings, and in particular at the essay from 1931, aura is actually a very, very different concept. So the first thing I would say, therefore, about aura is that it's very difficult to talk about aura as such, because the term undergoes so many developments and changes in Benjamin's thought. And so in my work, I suppose I focused more on the aura in relation to photography. And in the 1931 Little History of Photography, Benjamin relates aura to 19th century portraiture. The choice of portraiture has something to do in part with the fact, as I already mentioned, that Benjamin reviewed a couple of recent publications, and these publications were mainly, if not exclusively, on portraiture. So in part, it really comes from, you know, the work that he's looking at. And aura in relation to 19th century portraiture is still not a very straightforward term. And in fact, there are many ambiguous passages in Benjamin, in Benjamin's essay. Sometimes aura seems to be a kind of equivalent of the sort of early technique, the photographic technique that created a certain, especially in the calotypes. Calotypes were the first negative positive images with based on paper negatives. And the effect of the positive prints was a kind of very sort of grainy, sort of black and white, sort of not very distinct, you know, black and white contrast. And aura almost seems like a sort of quality of the image that is created by this early technology. Hmm. In other places, however, in the essay, aura appears to be much more of a phenomenon that is perceived and hence perhaps even co-created by the viewer. Mm-hmm. It's something that happens between the viewer and the image. In a later essay, an essay on Baudelaire, Benjamin comes back to this idea of the aura in relation to photography, and he describes aura as a kind of reciprocal gaze, a gaze from the viewer to the object, but also a gaze that is returned from the object to the viewer. Mm-hmm. So this idea of this exchange of gazes and the kind of reciprocal nature between the viewer and the object is foregrounded.
In the section on Benjamin, and the book is sort of divided into these two parts, where of course you're going back and forth and talking about these two thinkers, but you know, the first part of the book is really focused on Benjamin, and the second part of the book is focused on Barthes. We'll get into that part a little bit more in a few moments. But in the section on Benjamin, you do have a chapter that focuses on a reading of Benjamin's thoughts on a particular photograph, and that is this late 19th century winter garden portrait of Franz Kafka as a child. And you explore all of these different themes and issues in the discussion of this photograph: autobiography, selfhood, magic, memory, redemption. So I'm just wondering, Katrine, if you could say a little bit more about these themes, well, about the photograph and about these themes and how you're using Benjamin's work on this particular image.
Yes, and this is sort of coming back to your question, you know, the status of family portraiture in Benjamin's work. Because Benjamin's, so sort of staying with this 1931, a little history of photography essay, Benjamin's engagement with portraiture of the 19th century also brings him back to his own childhood portraits. And the essay, in addition to being a review, and it's obviously not just a review, the essay also traces a certain sort of history of the early development of photography. And what Benjamin focuses on is a certain high point in the development and the kind of the beauty even of photographs of the very early photographers in the mid-19th century. And then what he calls a decline in taste. And this is something that he sees very much related to photography that was, especially towards the end of the 19th century, standardized, and where especially childhood portraits or portraits of family members were quite sort of, standardized images, and where children and family members were put in quite sort of stifling settings. And so the status of family portraiture is to some extent related to this 19th century or late 19th century decline in photography. Now, the particular Kafka portrait, what is so fascinating about this particular image, and in a striking coincidence with the most important photograph in Barthes' work, the famous childhood photograph of his mother in a winter garden, finds a kind of correspondence in this winter garden photograph of Franz Kafka as a child. And this photograph, well, it's a photograph that was in Benjamin's possession. And he obviously uses this as an example, or it might seem as if he uses this as an example for this decline in taste. And in fact, he describes the image as, you know, related to this kind of stifling. I think he describes the setting as, looking like a torture chamber. So the child is wearing a humiliating humiliating costume. Mm-hmm. So it is, you know, you really sort of feel for this rather sad looking child that is Kafka. And although it is an example of this typical bourgeois type of family portraiture, for Benjamin, the photograph also has a whole different layer of meaning. And he focuses on one particular detail in this portrait, which are the very sad eyes, Kafka's very sad eyes. Mm. And because of the sadness in the boy's eyes, for Benjamin, the photograph takes on an entire new meaning. And the photograph, despite being part of this taste of decline, this decline in taste, despite being part of it, it also stands out. Mm-hmm. And not only in this first essay on photography from 31, but Benjamin repeatedly comes back to this photograph in other texts, among others in his more autobiographical Berlin Childhood around 1900 or in earlier versions of this. And we find that this particular photograph is more and more related to personal memory. He, in fact, fuses his own memories. He superimposes his own memories onto the image, and almost sort of where Kafka becomes the, you know, Kafka as child becomes Benjamin as child. Mm-hmm. So it is a very important image in Benjamin's work, and one in relation to which I would say also the singularity of photography comes to the foreground in Benjamin's writings, because it is this particular image that shows us this dynamic that I mentioned earlier, the kind of, you know, particular relation between the photograph, the sitter, in this case Kafka, mm-hmm. and the viewer, who is Benjamin.
In your analysis of Barthes' work, Katrine, you talk about two periods of his sort of thinking and writing on photography from the 50s to the late 70s and 80s. And you mentioned that Barthes' movement and ways of thinking about and working on photography actually in some ways are the reverse of Benjamin in terms of themes and emphases. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Yes. Well, what I meant with this, or what I was trying to show, is that, you know, looking at Benjamin's engagement with photography and Barthes' engagement with photography in parallel, you see that Benjamin, when he started writing on photography, he actually engaged with particular images. So his writing was really not just about photography as a medium, but about very, very specific images. And he moved in, you know, the later 1930s, and especially in his work on Baudelaire, and also in his work on the Parisian arcades. He moves much more towards an investigation of photography as a medium, mm-hmm. and what the impact of the medium was, this, you know, invention, what the impact was in these processes that together make up modernity. In Barthes' case, we find exactly the reverse case. He starts, or his first writings on photography are in the context of his semiotic and structuralist ideas. And so in this context, Barthes is much more interested in the nature of the photographic image. So one of his earliest, or some of the earliest writings on photography in Barthes' case is, for example, in the context of mythologies, the kind mm-hmm. of little essays about sort of, you know, contemporary then, so 1950s France, where photography obviously was a kind of ubiquitous image technology already, and used in many ways, you know, for advertising. Political candidates used photography to promote their own image, etc., etc. So Barthes' interest in the 1950s and still in the 1960s was very much on the meaning of photography, the medium specificity of photography, what made photography different from other representational art. And he moved then And the kind of turning point is sort of in the early 70s, mid-70s. He then moved towards an engagement that looked more and more at specific images. And his last text, La Chambre Claire, A Camera Lucida, then obviously is the kind of, you know, most specific engagement with particular images, images that are reproduced in the book or that are sort of described, you know, in these, well, ekphrastic ways. You know, he's sort of describing images that we actually don't see. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of what I meant with the, you know, complementary and yet sort of inverse developments when we look at Benjamin's and Barthes' sort of writings, you know, from really this sort of wide angle perspective, if you like.
You explore some very similar themes in both sections of the book, focused on these different thinkers and connecting them as well, of course, you know, ideas about the self, about autobiography, about memory, and then also, you know, because we probably can't talk about all of them, this notion of redemption comes up in your discussion of both thinkers. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what that means and how that theme of redemption operates.
Yes, well, redemption is a term that is very important in Benjamin's work, and explicitly so. Redemption is a term that has sort of many meanings in Benjamin's writings, and the one meaning that I'm particularly interested in is the kind of cultural critical meaning of the term. And redemption, in Benjamin's sense, refers to the idea. It has obviously, given his Jewish background, it has a kind of messianic Jewish connotation. But in the context of cultural criticism, it takes on the idea of a moment of saving something, or a moment in the present where you save something that is in the process of disappearing. It's perhaps a little bit paradoxical, but it also relates back to aura, because aura for Benjamin is also a concept that is a phenomenon. It's not really a concept. I'm never quite sure what to call it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, phenomenon is perhaps the best term. It's a phenomenon that in fact we only see because it is about to disappear, or because it has just disappeared. And so this idea of redemption and saving something is very much coming out of Benjamin's, of this kind of cultural critical meaning of Benjamin's idea of redemption. Mm-hmm. And what it relates to, well, it relates back to the notion of singularity. If singularity is this relational event, there is an existential aspect to this, because, and we've talked about this already, the photographs that these two authors are most interested in, I would say, or at least I have made it seem like this is the genre that they are most interested in, is portraiture. And in portraiture, there's always another person. There's always a sitter, someone whose real life, whose real existence is at stake. So it's not, you know, an imaginary sitter, but it is, or it was, a real flesh and blood person. Mm-hmm. And so this is where the existential or the redemptive aspect comes in, because this relational event that is singularity expresses itself, if you like, in a responsibility towards the other in the photograph. And this is this relation, you've mentioned it already, you know, the question of selfhood and otherness, etc. This is sort of where this dimension comes in. And so the redemptive aspect in both Benjamin and Barthes' writing, I have tried to argue, is this responsibility towards the other that in a way pays tribute to the singularity, because singularity, if it is an event, it disappears. It is very difficult. It's not, you know, it's not something that is stable. And so the only way to do justice to the singularity, to this experienced and felt singularity, is by writing about it. So this is where the sort of redemptive aspect comes in. It's about, you know, doing justice to the felt singularity, the experienced singularity that involves a responsibility towards the other.
This is perhaps a silly question, Katrine, but it seems like so much of what we've talked about already and the ideas in the work of these two thinkers only works if the photograph is in fact a photograph of a person, a portrait of some kind. It seems like, so did the work of these two thinkers, did they explore? I mean, obviously Benjamin talks about photography of artwork, but how much of a role does that these other types of photography play in their work and in your work on these two thinkers?
Well, in my work, it doesn't play an enormous role, because I think what I was most interested in was, you know, precisely this relational aspect. Mm-hmm. And this relational aspect is obviously most present if the photograph shows a human being.
Sure.
Benjamin actually does talk about photography, sort of avant-garde photography. He talks about other photographers, you know, of the 1930s, etc. So it is certainly an aspect that is there in Benjamin, perhaps slightly less so in Bacht, although Bacht also wrote on, you know, art, etc. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly something that I have, you know, very much sidelined in my argument.
Proust plays an interesting role in your readings of both of these authors. And I wonder if you could just say a little bit about that, you know, in your readings of both of them and in their works.
Yes. In fact, thank you for mentioning this. It's something that I almost, I wouldn't have thought about this now for some reason, but you're absolutely right that Proust plays this enormous role, in this discussion, especially in relation to photography. Proust played also a very important role for these thinkers in very different ways. I mentioned at the very beginning of this interview that Benjamin translated three volumes, the first three volumes of Proust. So he was extremely, very intimately familiar with Proust's writing. And in fact, from his correspondence, we know that Benjamin was extremely frustrated when he read Proust, because he felt that Proust, you know, was doing a lot of the things already that he wanted to do in his own work. So it was a kind of very difficult relationship where, on the one hand, he realized that he found a lot of, you know, support, if you like, in Proust's writing, but also a certain amount of frustration, because there was this constant feeling of, oh, Proust did this already, what I want to do. And it wasn't actually in you know, in terms of literary writing, it was more in terms, I think Benjamin really read Proust almost like a philosopher, as someone who had a lot to say about, you know, the experience of modernity, and obviously especially about, you know, memory and how memory changes, or how, how memory experience change in the process of modernity. So this was, you know, Benjamin's relation, quite difficult relation, conflictual relation with Proust. For Bacht, Bacht's relation to Proust, intellectual relation, was very different. Proust played, the reading of Proust played an enormously important part in I think, you know, all of Bacht's writing, really, from the start. Proust is one of these authors in Bacht's work who is there right from the start until the very end. And it's interesting how Proust, in a way, despite all the changing methodologies and sort of disciplines that Bacht's work moves through, Proust is there as almost this kind of constant companion. And especially towards the end of his life, Bacht very much identified with Proust, and in a much more sort of creative way. So unlike Benjamin, Bacht actually had this desire to write a novel, and Proust was an extremely important reference point, both to sort of work through this desire and to understand the desire, but also in terms of, you know, what it means to write a novel. Because Proust plays this important part in both of these thinkers' work, and in relation to photography, when it comes to memory, memory and photography are, I think this is a kind of, if we look at the question of memory and photography, this is really a topos, that is there right from the start, in photographic history or in the history of photographic theory. And so Proust simply imposed himself as this, you know, enormously important point of comparison, in my work.
The book ends, Katrine, with a discussion of singularity and photography in this age of digitization. And I just wonder if you could share a few thoughts on how the work of both Benjamin and Barthes might help us to think about more recent developments in the world of photography and the image.
Yes, I felt that we're working on two thinkers who were the only technology, photographic technology they knew was analog photography. But I did feel that writing an entire book on them, I should say something about the more contemporary context and how these themes that I developed out of my reading, out of their writing, had, relevance in the digital, after the digital turn. I think, what struck me is that when the digital image took hold in the early 90s, the reactions by photographic historians and theorists was the idea that there was a complete break with everything that came before, a total questioning of what photography was and, what its essence was about, etc. And I felt that, I wondered simply, why then Benjamin and Barthes still speak to us today? Why do they have this relevance that they clearly still have? And what I then focused on was the perspective of the viewer. So it wasn't so much about how digitization changed image production technologies, and this is first and foremost what it is about, but rather shifting the focus onto the processes of viewing images, the position of the viewer. And I think, I've mentioned it quite a few times already, this idea that singularity has a lot to do with the viewer, the person looking at the photograph. And so I felt that this was the most sort of fruitful way of actually thinking through this digital turn, if you like, with Benjamin and Barthes. That in fact, a lot of the viewing habits, a lot of the important and meaningful processes that happen when we engage with actual photographs are not that clear-cut different from analog photography. So the difference between analog and digital almost disappears.
It's really fascinating. And the fact that the book ends with this more discussion of more contemporary developments in photography sort of leads me nicely to want to ask you about this special issue of Nottingham French Studies that's just come out this past summer, focused on photography in contemporary French and Francophone cultures. And I wonder if you could say a little bit about your experience of editing this volume, the choices of, essays that are included in it, what its themes are, the contribution that you're seeking to make with this special issue on photography in contemporary French and Francophone cultures.
Yes, you say it leads our discussion of digitization leads nicely on to discussing this issue, which in fact isn't that much about digitization. In fact, which, may sort of prove the point I was trying to make, that the difference, I think, 20 years or more later is actually was perhaps in the 1990s slightly overemphasized. As a project, it is something very, very different. In a way, I came to this project obviously through my interest in photography, and in this context or with this special issue, much more in relation to the disciplinary context of French studies. So what I found very interesting is while I was working on photography in a French studies context, I realized that although visual culture and especially cinema, but also popular culture is quite prominent in the disciplinary curriculum, be it teaching or research, but that photography has this kind of rather precarious, almost invisible place in the discipline. And so the purpose of this issue and the purpose of the issue was twofold, if you like. One was to showcase the research that is underway and has been underway for a number of years in French studies in relation to photography, but also to actually give photography this visibility in the discipline. So it was a kind of, it was this two-pronged approach. The corpus and history that it looks at four or there are, well, there are 8 essays, and they are grouped in two, well, there are sort of 2 essays on roughly similar themes and topics, and it moves from a history of the cultural institutionalization of photography in France and sort of contemporary discourses in relation to art, to discussions of specific photographers who work in especially urban contexts, to then look at photography and how photography is used and what the meaning of photography is in relation to cultural identity in a wider Francophone context. And then a final pair of essays on photography in relation to literary writing and especially autobiographical or biographical writing and the phenomenon that is called photobiography.
The issue does, in fact, you know, explore this amazing range of issues and themes in the contemporary world of French photography, and it made me realize and Francophone cultures, and made me realize how little, in fact, I knew about contemporary French photography. So I learned a great deal from reading through the issue. Well, Katrine, I've taken up a lot of your time, so there's just one last question I'd like to ask you, which is, what are you working on now?
Well, I'm currently working on a project that is a much more broader historical study on photography and French studies, and it is on the impact of photography on the cultural construction of authorship. It moves from the mid 19th century, so really from the invention of the medium to the present day, and looks how photographs or portraits of writers have been used and disseminated by writers themselves, but also by others, to create and promote a public persona in tandem with their own writings, but also their own reflection, more theoretical and conceptual reflection on the question of authorship and the authorial persona.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting project, and I hope I'll get to speak with you about it when it comes out in new book form.
That would be fun.
Well, Katrine, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and for writing the book on Benjamin and Bach, and for all of your editorial work on that special issue of Nottingham French Studies that's just come out.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you very much.
You've been listening to New Books in French Studies. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I hope you'll join us again next time.